Grade 4 Conference, Lecture 6, Parent Work, Part 8. I said that there is one more good thing that comes out of this telephone call method. It's actually two. One of them is that because you are having regular conversations with all of your parents, all of your families, when it comes to that difficult time to which I alluded several lectures back, the question and answer segment of your parent evening, you already have a pretty good idea about what's on the minds of the parents, what questions they will ask. You know, certainly they'll always be the anomalous one, but on the whole, you'll pretty much be able to predict what sorts of things you're going to be asked. You'll have answers ahead of time because you've probably answered parents individually about a lot of these matters. It will help you relax even till the bitter end of your parent evening, and it will make you feel better, and therefore you'll give better answers, and parents won't feel you're being defensive or hiding something or whatever. So in that respect, it's really as good as gold, and it will make your parent evenings a different experience, but something else as well. And that is, if you're writing three sentences about every child in your class two or even three times a month, okay, let's, you know, lowball it first. You're doing that twice a month, three sentences. That gives you six sentences every month. If school's about 10 months long, that gives you 55, 60 sentences for that child. If we highball it and have more sentences going, we're talking about 80 sentences, 90 sentences. That means in June, when it comes time to write your final report for the year, you already have an excellent outline of the report. You may have already half of the sentences in the report are already written, and they're sentences that will then help you recollect other things that you could have written. Your reports will flow. You may even find yourself enjoying report time. And whether you enjoy it or not, something else is that you will have sentences that you wrote in September, October, November, all the way back through the whole school year. I don't know about you, but before I developed this method, all I could remember in June was the class play we had had in April and the class trip we had taken in May. Because a Waldorf year, especially fourth grade, oh my God, so much happens. It moves with such speed, and the children are developing and growing at such a rapid pace that every week kind of obliterates what happened the week before. It gets more and more exciting, more and more complex, more and more demanding. And finally, it's hard for the children and for you to remember very far back. In fact, when the children are getting their main lesson books together at the end of the school year, they'll look at things that they did in October or November and say, "We did that in third grade." "No, you didn't. It says fourth grade on it." "No, no. That's third grade. I draw so much better now." See, and if you don't have the overall picture, if you don't have the panorama that began way back when, at the beginning of the school year, you are not going to recall how much progress a given child has made. Children generally make much more progress in a year then we give them credit for at the year's end, because we can only remember the last few weeks. Maybe you've been introducing something brand new, and they don't get it, and all you can think of is they're not getting math, they're not getting grammar, when actually they've come so far. So having this this big picture, these many sentences upon which to draw in June will change your life and will change your feeling about teaching, and you won't be there, you know, going to some event in late June still pretending you're taking notes and actually writing your reports. I've seen that. So think about, again, this exercise, this work, you know, observing two or three children very carefully every morning, taking good, however terse, notes about those children at the end of main lesson, making the phone calls to the parents, and then taking those children into your inner life. I would not call this meditating on the class by any means. This is a contemplative exercise. Meditation is something very different, but it's still very effective and a very important thing that you can be doing. Okay, so please consider this, give it a try. Funny thing that I've heard from many teachers is, well, I intended to do it, I really got all fired up about it, and then, as you suggested, I told my colleagues that I was going to do this, and wow, did I ever get shot down. I couldn't do it. Why? Because colleagues said, if you do it, then I have to do it, because I have three of your siblings in my class, and it's going to look like you really care about your children and I don't. Well, good, then do it. That's great. We'll both do it. I'm too busy. What, are you kidding? I've been teaching for 25 years and I'm doing just fine. And it's amazing, amazing, amazing. We see what a kind of, you know, communist workers' paradise a Waldorf school can become, where you know you're going to have your job whether you work or not. So why work? It's really this kind of thing. And the discussions that ensue about it, the things that people have shared with me that have gone on in their schools around this issue, and I must admit a few other things I'm going to share with you, it's just amazing. And it doesn't. It's not that anybody really says to this eager beaver teacher, you know, it's not a good idea, it won't work, the parents won't like it. They all agree. It actually sounds very good. But it means more work, or at least it means discipline. It means changing your ways and doing something different. And wow, is that ever rough for an educational system that's all about growth, change, transformation, self-knowledge, and so on and so forth. It's amazing what we see about our colleagues when we bring something like this up. But anyway, another way of approaching this is the time-honored maxim: it's easier to ask forgiveness than permission. That's another way of going about it too, but you have to decide that for yourself. So this leads us to one last point about parent work, and that is the written report. Written reports, which reached a kind of wonderful apogee in the 1980s or so, when schools would insist, as mine did and I did, that everything be handwritten, and that maybe there be a drawing accompanying the report, and it be done on parchment paper, and we really went back into our old wonderful monkish consciousness and had a grand old time. I think things have gone downhill since then. Not only are many schools having the reports sent directly to a computer and then automatically transferred to the secretary's office to be sent out, that's fine, nothing wrong with that, but the question of whether a narrative is sufficient or whether a narrative is of any value whatsoever looms very large in many schools, and more schools have added all kinds of rubrics so that the special subject teachers only have to check off, you know, satisfactory, excellent, pretty good, whatever, and maybe write one or two sentences, which if you read enough of them, you realize are basically boilerplate. You know, they have four or five basic sentences and they just substitute names. So parents, we are told, are looking for hard facts. They want figures, they want numbers, they want check marks that they can look at. So I don't know. Obviously, I have other feelings about it, and I think that it's really an art form, this narrative report, and it's something that is well worth cultivating. It's interesting also, because Waldorf schools, you can always count on us being 10, 20 years behind the time, that in medical schools, there are courses being given on narrative case studies, how to write a narrative about what is wrong with a person rather than just throw off a lot of facts and figures from their chart. That in the world of business, advertising, and so on and so forth, more and more interest has been engaged in working with the art of narrative, of that stories are what's interesting. You know, that a politician who stands up and says, you know, we need to help the poor is not going to be nearly as effective winning over the hearts and minds of voters as someone who says, just the other day, I was walking down the street and I saw some homeless person there asking for money, and I just got down and had a talk with him, and I said, what do you think needs to be changed? Even though it's a ridiculous story to think of one of these politicians walking down a street at all, not in his stretch limo, but nonetheless, they've got you. It's a story. And if it's told well, it's going to remain with you in a way that just generalized statements, even facts and figures and charts, will not. So everybody else is kind of catching on to that, just as Waldorf is, you know, back there in the 1990s or early 2000s, where everything has to be metric. So I would, you know, beg you, try if you can to write what you can about the child. Those sentences you already have will help. But to think of yourself as a novelist, as a playwright, as somebody trying to find the archetypal drama that this child has come into, where he or she has been waiting in the wings of the spiritual world, and now their time on stage has come. And what is the drama in which they are starring, or at least playing an important supporting role? That sort of thing can be very, very important. Try to avoid euphemisms and generalizations. This has been the death of the narrative mode in Waldorf education. And parents have had a lot of justification in saying, she says the same thing every year. When I look at your daughter's sparkling blue eyes and gorgeous gold hair, I think she's a princess and whatever, whatever. And I don't learn anything new about my child. And certainly this can be the case. Try not to do that. And I would say if you have been diligently bringing pictures of the fourfold human being to your class, to your parents, that is, try to bring that to the report as well. Try to make that etheric astral body, those bodies, come alive in what you write. Try to show how they manifest in the child's struggles and also in his or her triumphs. So before we read the obituary of the narrative report in the Waldorf school, let's ask ourselves if we have really done our very best in the way of crafting these and bringing them into the 21st century. So with this, I'm going to end the segment on parent work. And we are going to start to look at aspects of the Waldorf curriculum in grade 4.